strength. Join the Strog team.
Digital technologies arrived at most schools in New Zealand, and with the government's commitment to get 97% of New Zealand schools hooked up to ultra-fast broadband within the next 6 years, accessing and creating digital content should become a whole lot easier in the classroom of the future. So what will this mean for the publishers of educational resources, i.e. textbooks? Will we see school kids of the future carrying a shiny device in their bags loaded with hundreds of school books? Kilos of paper replaced by gigabytes of memory. That'll keep the kids happy and the chiropractors too. David Glover's the CEO of Learning Media, and he's just returned from Content in Context, Education Beyond the Book. It's a gathering of the big boys in the world of educational publishing, and it was recently held in the US.
Part of the issue, and it's something they talk about in the American conference I've just been to, is the weight in the school bag. You know, the amount of volume and just sheer kilogrammage of textbooks that is bad for children's health these days, the amount of study they have. So digital, just very simply, to start off with, offers an opportunity to lighten the school bag.
Is the fear the same as the book industry, maybe the music industry? I mean, the broad fear is the fact that once it's digital, it can be easily replicated and you suddenly lose control, and that actual revenue models don't become as obvious as when you're selling atoms through a store.
There is a general belief out there, even in the US government side, that digital equals free. So a year ago, Arnie Schwarzenegger said, California's broke, we can't afford textbooks, we're going to do it all digital. Now, he assumed it was free. Someone still has to do the work, put it together, distribute it, set up the access, monitor the quality, etc. So it's not necessarily free. As somebody said, it's a bit like free like a dog rather than free like a beer. Someone may give you the dog, but you've still got to train it, you've got to look after it, you've got to keep it going. There's nothing free in the digital world, I don't think.
So what are the big issues then facing the educational publishing industry? And you've just been, as you say, in the US looking at this, and no doubt you're pretty familiar with what's going on. What are the key issues there?
Well, there's some really exciting stuff, because there's a lot of evidence beginning to come out in research by organizations like the Bill Gates Foundation for Education, which Bill and Melinda Gates run, that digital can really help engagement in the classroom. And over there, they've got dropout factories and the big urban populations. They've got schools where kids are just not graduating at huge rates. And there's evidence that technology works for the kids. That should be no surprise, but also helps their learning. So there's a big win if we can get this right. The challenge is people are still trying to crack the code of what is educationally successful, because just taking a book and making a PDF and sticking it on a website is not really changing the game. So there's a meeting of minds now of how are we going to find something that's educationally effective, that uses this technology in a way that's never been used before. And that's really the big challenge. And there's a lot of people experimenting, but from the recent conference I've just been to, I don't see any silver bullet at this point.
Really? So there's not as if there's one sort of the education book, which is a piece of hardware that might provide the infrastructure for stuff to be sent to, and then some sort of central educational repository that's overseeing all of this lovely content? That's not really when we look at books, we've seen Amazon Kindle, we've got the e-book reader, we've got the Kobo, we've got Retail. There's lots of little silos of content and different hardware platforms. It's all quite complex trying to work your way sort of through it as a consumer.
I'm sure Steve Jobs at Apple is hoping that iTunes U will be that. If you go and look at your iTunes apps, you'll see a lot of free content, a lot of university content, a lot of school content.
This is iTunes U.
iTunes U, which is in the iTunes store, but it's like, for instance, you can download MIT lectures right now onto your iPhone or when you get your iPad.
For free.
For free, or onto any Apple software. So there is already a fair amount of content. There's the beginning of a channel there. The issue is, I've just got my shiny new iPad back from the States, and I've been downloading educational materials like crazy onto it, and I'm very disappointed right now, because basically they're books that turn the page by touching the screen instead of turning the page. They're still books. They don't animate very easily. You can't interact with them. There's one or two that talk a little bit, and you can do a bit of scribbling on the page, but they're not actually using the media in any exciting or educational way. And that's, I think, where the educational publishers come into play, as opposed to the traditional publishers, because we should be able to sit down and say, how do we make this exciting for kids and students to learn? And how do we make it something that you can't do with a book? I think that's the great opportunity to create something that the kids can interact with, they can create their own stories, they can build on existing material, and they learn at the same time. So taking some of the elements of gaming, but making it more educational.
And how is that then going to function as an industry? Because I guess at the end of the day, there's got to be dollars and cents. We've got to drive this, as well as learning outcomes at the other end.
I think there's some clues in the economics of it from the music industry and from the media industry to some extent. We're moving from sort of a product model to a service type model. So where these services do exist, they tend to be sold as subscriptions. So schools will subscribe to a channel just as we subscribe to Sky TV. So instead of buying a book, you'll buy access to a bunch of content. And as long as it's useful, you'll pay your subscription. And if you don't use it, then you'll switch to something else.
And quality control will be done by...
That's a big issue, of course, because these things have to be educationally good. They can't just be free stuff on the net, because there's a lot of stuff that's not true on the net. So the quality control is the costly part. A model that's gaining a lot of traction that I'm seeing is crowdsourcing, i.e. getting teachers themselves to nominate the materials that they think are suitable for their kids, to share what they're using in the classroom to a wider audience. So many, many people contributing to the quality assurance process.
And again, that crowdsource scenario here is you could have a resource somewhere that maybe had a T rating of 8,000, which meant that 8,000 teachers had actually used that effectively in the classroom and could say, you know, front up, I guess, and give you a pedagogical reason or rationale of why that actually affected their students and their learning.
Absolutely. And there's a new service, and there's one that we're looking at bringing to New Zealand, which is in that area of quality assured search. So that when you do type in polar bears and you want something for year eights, that you not only get a polar bear for year eights, but you might get some examples of how to use it in teaching, and you know that it's been quality assured in some shape or other. That's a valuable service for busy teachers.
Is one of the challenges with the educational publishing and this idea of digital content the platform that it's going to be received on? Because that traditionally has been a barrier for schools, isn't it? The number of screens and boxes that they can afford, and how do you create something that's maybe portable and usable?
And I think the educational publishers in the States have actually had to do a U-turn on this. A year ago, they were all coming out with proprietary systems, and it was all highly spec'd and all shiny and Rolls-Royce, and none of it worked with anybody else's stuff. You couldn't break it down and use bits. You sort of bought the whole thing. I think they've now realized that certainly teachers mix and match and blend and add their own stuff, and they want to be able to take the material down to a granular level. So for that to work, it has to be at the lowest common denominator of distribution. So it has to be material that can work on many, many platforms, the oldest PC to some extent or the other. And then as you get a better platform, perhaps you can do more with the material, but it has to be ubiquitous. Otherwise, you just don't get the traction.
And I guess handsets being the obvious future format with, I know even at Radio New Zealand, the number of page requests now that we're getting from mobile phones is considerably higher than it was a year ago, and that's only set to grow.
And we're seeing schools in New Zealand, whereas they used to say turn off or leave at home your mobile phones, they're saying turn them on and bring them into the classroom. And they're using them as teaching tools very successfully.
So it really does sound as if everything is still up for grabs within this sector, that there's no clear way forward.
There's no one market leader. You could say that Apple is moving into this space quite heavily, but they operate a closed system by and large at the moment. Everything to do with Apple is within the Apple world, so that sort of defeats the purpose of that shared platform that I think will be needed in education. But as somebody said at the conference, you know, having 160 electronic whiteboards doesn't give you 160 interactive classrooms. What you actually need to do is work out what to do with the whiteboards, teach the teachers how to use it, and get them to do things differently. And that is still wide open. It's a huge opportunity for New Zealand educators as well, because we're very good at this sort of stuff. Our teaching culture is very pragmatic, is very innovative compared to somewhere like America, which is very prescriptive. So we have big opportunities ourselves and other educational companies in New Zealand to innovate on a world basis and come up with some solutions. And we're certainly working hard on that.
Could we fast forward a few years and maybe we'd see like a whole educational apps industry? And I mean, the apps industry for Apple and also for Android now is multi-billion dollar. And this is a case of somebody sat at home in their bedroom designing, for example, a device that will, or a little app that will recognize what bird calls, you know, in the wild. You hold your phone up and it'll say, oh, that's a tui. I mean, they're wondrous. There's millions of them out there. There are some that are a complete waste of time. But are we heading towards an application industry?
I think there's going to be huge opportunity for clever innovation, even down at the individual student level, who might come up with some fantastic solution educationally that works across the world. But do remember, this is not a consumer marketplace. This is a corporate marketplace in the sense that schools and governments generally pay for this stuff. So it's going to have to be on a fairly substantial, sustainable scale that these offerings work, rather than a lot of mini micro offerings, because they're corporate purchases in that sense. A different market, which could be a potentially growing market, is for parents, because parents are concerned about their kids' education. If they can see that by investing in new digital tools, they will help their kids' education, they're already doing it. That could be more of a consumer marketplace for those sort of that app idea that you have.
This must be highly disruptive, I guess, for what I'll call an old school teacher, because if you put this technology in the hands of a child or a student, they essentially can answer any question as quick as it takes them to stick something in a search bar. Now, obviously, provenance and all of those other authenticity comes into it as well, but it really does sort of let the cat out of the bag, doesn't it? No longer is the teacher the one sat there with all the information and sort of drip-feeding it to a select few.
Well, that change in teaching has already happened, I think, at least philosophically in New Zealand, and with the introduction of the new curriculum. There's a saying that the teachers are moving from being the sage on the stage to the coach alongside, and that's already happening in terms of educational belief that that's the way kids need to learn. They need to do more themselves and they need to be supported and coached. And it's not about facts and testing, it's about learning how to learn. But the whole technological opportunity is just going to drive that even faster and make it even more exciting. So the younger teachers, of course, they're more in that digital world, they'll pick it up more quickly. But I think all good teachers, when they see a good tool or a good resource, will use it for better teaching.
How do you go and assess those resources, though, and the ability of a student to use those? They take a whole different set of measures and monitors, don't they? I mean, we've seen how difficult it is getting the national standards sort of agreeing on that, and it's not fully agreed on still. So how are we going to cope in a digital published environment where people are doing stuff in digital spaces?
Well, I think, like any introduction to new technology, there's not going to be a lot of science in terms of the measurement of effectiveness to kick off with. What we're going to see is a lot of people trying different stuff, and some of the stuff will work and some won't. And what works will pass on. So, for instance, there was a case history from a US district, Mooresville district in Virginia in the States, at the conference. They have moved to a one-to-one computing environment. Heavy investment, but they made that decision. Their suspensions are down 64%. Their classroom scores and achievement are up 19%. They know not only is the engagement happening that we talked about at the beginning, but they're actually getting better results. So people are all over that county trying to work out what's working, what are they doing. And a big part of it is they've invested in teacher capacity and training, so they know how to use the tools as well.
Is there an opportunity here for New Zealand to gain from digital educational publishing?
Oh, we can move much more quickly, of course, because we've got a smaller education system. We've already got a commitment to trial the National Education Network, which will bring up ultra-fast broadband to schools all across the country over time. So there's a huge opportunity for us to take a leap forward.
Where are we at with that educational network?
The initial trial's happening this year. So I believe that in the budget there was money to get that up and running, and the debate is happening as to the best way to use that and where it's going to go forward.
And hopefully we'll update you on how that trial is going. Cheers, David. David Glover, he's the CEO of Learning Media, and there's a link to the conference he attended on our website at radionz.co.nz/thiswayup.